You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Pardon the interruption. We'll bring you back to your podcast in just a moment. But first, promo for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here on the ESO Network, three hosts recommend this podcast.
I recommend it.
I recommend it.
And I recommend it.
On the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, it's a slice of life as we discuss literally anything in the universe. Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here to serve all of your needs.
Wednesday, I'm here with you people. It's, like, wild.
No pizzas were harmed in the creation of this podcast.
This is full-scale war against the terrible enemy that the modern man has never before
faced. Evidently, you do not realize you are in an interstellar companion. You are already outside the atmosphere of your own planet.
Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Monster Attack, the podcast dedicated to old monster movies. Well, folks, this is going to be a cold, cold episode. So I'm going to need some help with it. And standing by, and he always seems to be around for some of these great movies that we talk about, Clay Sayer is with us again this week. Hey, Clay, come on board. Now, folks, as I always say whenever Clay's with us, If you like the movie that we're doing tonight, I'm the one that picked it. If you didn't like it, Clay picked this one.
That's right.
And we're not gonna get stuck in a rut here, but it seems like every time I pull Clay into the action, it's always a TV movie. So there's been a lot of TV movies we need to talk about during this time period. And tonight's movie, Snow Beast, is just one of many that were done about, well, they never call him a Yeti in this, but that's, I guess, no. Who he is. Well, they never really do say. So
they don't care.
Yeah. I'm going to say this is a typical made for TV film. I got a kick out of the fact that the director and the producers of the film, Some of the stuff that they sort of specialized in, this is like sort of their first horror film, or only horror film, I should say. The director, if I can find his name here, Herb Wallenstein, wasn't really known for horror films at all. He did do some episodes of Star Trek, the original series, directed some Mission Impossible, and also The $6 Million Man. So he's done sci-fi, I guess. But the producers of this pretty much did TV fare that was not really science fiction. Wilfred Lloyd Baums and Douglas Kramer. Now, that name ought to jump out to folks right away, because his name was all over TV in the 70s and the 80s. But doing stuff like The Brady Bunch, The Odd Couple, Mission Impossible, Dynasty, The Love Boat, which can we compare this film to The Love Boat? It doesn't have that kind of appeal to it. I don't know. But anyway, the only really individual involved with this that had any kind of experience with horror or science fiction, more science fiction than horror, was Joseph Stefano, who we all of us who grew up during this time period remember for The Outer Limits. So an interesting mix of individuals. So, Clay, what was your first impression of Snow Beast? 1977, by the way, folks, this is the year we're talking.
You know, I have a fondness for these TV movies. So,
oh, I do too. I did too growing up. Some of them were
a big thing for me. This period of time, they would literally just try anything.
That's true.
One of the things you see is what you mentioned. They wouldn't like find a genre person.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would find who was available,
mm-hmm,
and who was cheap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was the big thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, these so things, and they shot them. They shot them in like a week. I mean, I remember.
Yeah.
Did you ever work on any TV movies, Clay?
No.
When I first got started acting in Georgia, it was like that was like the only thing they were shooting in Atlanta. were TV movies. So they were like down and dirty and fast. And oh my God, it was almost like guerrilla filmmaking. So,
and they didn't, you know, they didn't think that these aren't films that were going to be studied. You had a 2-hour slot. A lot of these include a lot of establishing shots.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
On fillers. This one more than most.
Yeah. There were a lot of traveling around shots on snowmobiles.
Oh yeah.
An awful lot of that. And skiing.
And lots of POV shots.
Yeah.
Which is horrible.
Yeah.
And just a slow, you know, the main thing about this is you watch it, you come away from it and it goes, not much happens.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, you know, it's
that's the TV Guide review for this.
Oh, okay.
Not much happens. And even the ending is, we'll get to that, is very anticlimactic.
Yes. Yes.
You know, this is 77. So we're still at the tail end of the Bigfoot craze.
Oh yeah.
You know, and if you watch $6 Million Man, then you were hooked on Bigfoot. This was a disappointment.
Oh, I forgot. That's right. I forgot Bigfoot was a character in the $6 Million Man. I remember. I'm trying to think of the movie. There was a independent film that came out in the early 70s. Oh God, it had Don Wells in it. That's all I remember. You know, from Gilligan's Island.
The other Bigfoot movie?
It was shot in Louisiana, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Not the Sasquatch movie.
No, this was before they didn't call it Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Oh, well, I'll have to, folks, I didn't do my homework on this one. I just happened to think, oh, yeah, there were some other.
Oh, Boggy Creek.
The Legend of Boggy Creek. I was trying to think. I mean, that was really the first one other than.
Dana Plato was in that thing, too.
And Dana Plato was in there as a kid. That's right. You know, other than the Hammer film, which I'd seen on TV, the one that came out in the 50s with Peter Cushing, and then the god-awful snow creature one or whatever, the one that I first thought you were recommending with Snow Beast, which we had done a show on like about 4 years ago. It was really awful. The guy looked like he was dressed in a carpet.
Oh, God. And this is not much better because, let's should start. This is basically a beast terrorizing a snow resort.
Yes, in Colorado. They're in Colorado, although they never really say that, but that's everything I've read said. That's where they filmed it. They filmed it in Colorado.
Yeah, they filmed it in Colorado.
Right. So we're just going to go with that.
So the big names that we are able to pull in for our little open is Bo Svenson.
Oh, yeah.
Who did do a lot of oddball. He kind of did a little bit of everything.
Oh, he did, man. He's still going. You know, he just finished a film like last year. He's still acting strong.
I always liked him.
Me too.
He wasn't a great actor. You know, not a lot of range, but I don't know. There was something always likable about him.
He had a screen persona that was just very enjoyable. So that, you know, I loved him in North Dallas 40. I think that may be one of the best.
And that's then, course, probably the best course, thing.
But I love the Walking Tall movies. So when he took the place of Joe Don Baker in the last two Walking Tall films, you know, I remember going into the second one thinking, I don't know, if, because I really liked the first movie and thought, how can they replace Joe Don Baker? And then, you know, he kicked right in there. It was like, damn, this guy's good. Yeah, he's all right.
He's the one. He's probably the one we remember.
Yeah, because he did the last two.
More than the others. And
I had forgotten he was on it also on another TV show that I used to watch, or my family watched it in the 60s, called Here Come the Brides. The one that launched Bobby Sherman. I'd forgotten he had a regular role in that as well. And then the made-for-TV movie Frankenstein. Not the one that we've done a show. We did a show on the true story of Frankenstein. I had forgotten about this.
Oh, this is the one with
where he plays the creature.
Yeah, I was trying to think who's in that one.
And it was the one done by Dan Curtis, by the way. Robert Foxworth. Robert Foxworth was And so that may be a show we've got to do down the road here, another TV movie that we'll talk about. Because from what I recall, that was not bad. That was a pretty decent movie, version of it. Back when when Dan Curtis did his Dracula, and then with Jack Palance, and then he also used Jack Palance for Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So, Bo has done some fun stuff along the way here. He's had quite a career.
And I was trying to think what else that he had done as far as he did Inglourious Bastards.
I was going to say he did the one in 1978, which a lot of people have forgotten about. I went back and watched it after Quentin.
See, I remember that one, but then he has a little part in.
He has a little part in Tarantino's, because that Tarantino cast him specifically because he was in the original.
So yeah, he's an interesting guy.
He really is,
and he made his way through the TV and the occasional TV movies, and I mean he did quite a few TV movies during that time.
Yes, he did. He spent a lot of time on television.
Remember, they did Walking Tall as a TV series. Remember, they tried to spin it
off. Oh, that's right. And he was Buford in that, too.
It died really quick. Although, doesn't he die in one of the movies, the last movie, Final Chapter? Doesn't he die?
Yes. Well, I mean, the real Buford Pusser, the real Buford Pusser did get killed. I mean, was murdered. The second movie was made, and the real Buford Pusser was still alive, but got killed while they were shooting that second movie. So the third movie sort of dealt with him dying or whatever.
Right.
But
going back, someone you mentioned being a fan of Outer Limits.
Oh yeah.
It is very surprising. Now, Justice Stefano did a lot of stuff.
Yes. Yes.
This is definitely in the category of lesser works.
Yeah, I don't know if this is what he's going to really say. Well, you don't have to acknowledge me for this one.
and you wonder, I mean, this could have been an episode of Outer Limits.
It could have been, yeah.
Shortened down, tighter, and it probably would have been, it still would have been a mediocre one, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It would have been better, shorter, because it's really only 45 minutes of content.
Maybe. Yeah, it is. I had the one that I saw, the copy of it that I watched to do the show here, is a little longer than the one that was on TV. I mean, the one I saw just a few days ago was 86 minutes. If I'm not mistaken, I think they said the actual one that broadcast was like about 77 minutes, which would make sense because these movies of the week usually only had an hour and a half time slot. And then you had to fit in a few commercials. So usually they were very short. So, this could have very comfortably been made into an Outer Limits episode and run about 48 minutes.
Definitely.
Yeah, because you see a lot of scenery in this movie, folks.
I'll get it right. More than you need to see.
Yeah, a lot of snow. But now I got a kick out of the snowmobiles because I grew up in the north for many years, and so I was into snowmobiling up there until we moved down south. But and a lot of skiing. I was never good at skiing, but it's just like, I remember finding myself talking to the TV set on this one. It's one of those films, folks, that'll get you to talk to the TV set.
Well,
we know they can ski. They're at a ski resort, for God's sake. Yeah. Let's move on.
It's a perfect TV movie because, during that time, there was plenty of time to get up, go to the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
Ice cream or, some water or something, whatever, because between the commercials and these boring shots of the mountains. another thing is, this director was no good at creating any kind of tension. And this movie falls into that category. I think, because that's really what it is. It's here's a beast and here's a small group of people that fight it, which it narrows down to three people, if you think about it. So it's Jaws again.
Oh, yeah. No, basically the whole movie centers around those three people. Yeah, and we mentioned Bo Svenson. He's like a former, he plays a guy who's a former gold medal skier.
Yeah.
And apparently Bo Svenson was a very good skier. As a matter of fact, he did his own skiing in this, from what I understand. But he's down on his luck because, you know, sort of washed up and looking for a job up at the ski resort with his buddy, played by Robert Logan. So folks might remember he was sort of a pretty boy from the 60s and the 70s. I think he did a couple of soap operas and stuff like that. And he's
just guest shots. Well, you know what I remember him from? Because my parents drug us to see this was Wilderness Family.
Oh, the Wilderness. I'd forgotten about that. That's right. That's when he made his comeback. That was his. Yeah, he'd been out of the business for a little while, or he'd been sort of not doing a whole lot. And then that sort of revitalized
those. Yeah. Two of those movies.
It sort of revitalized his career again. For, you know, because I had, when I saw it, and I got to confess, folks, I had not seen this movie in many years. When I saw his name come up in the credits, it's like, who is that guy? And then when I saw him, I thought, man, he looks like Robert Wagner. You know, he's got sort of that kind of look to him. And I remember getting.
He's still alive.
He's still around. Yeah. You know, and I kept saying through the whole movie, thinking, okay, he and Bo Svenson are supposed to be good buddies in the movie. They're supposed to be really good buddies in the film. And Bo Svenson's character ended up marrying the gal that he wanted, who's played by Yvette Mimieux. And I kept thinking, these guys don't look like they could be buddies because Svenson looked older than him. I mean, but they're the same age. I couldn't believe it when I looked that up. They are almost the exact same age. They were both born in 1941. And she was, and Yvette was born about the same time.
So, they're both still alive. Of course, she died
just a couple of years ago, or was it last year?
Last year, I think.
Yeah, it hasn't been long. It's like
now she had the longer.
Yeah, it was last genre. Year. Yeah, she passed away last year. Yep.
She had definitely the longer list of genre titles to her name.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would say yeah.
Because I mean, obviously, Time Machine, but you know, Black Hole, and
she did a lot of TV, but she also had a lot more bigger movies. I don't want to say she was the most successful out of this bunch, but probably the most recognizable, other than Bo Svenson. But then one other that I need to mention that. Actually has, I don't want to say the movie, you know, those three that we just mentioned, pretty much the whole movie centers around them. But then you've got Clint Walker, who plays the sheriff, and he's definitely definitely near the end of his career. But, I mean, you know, for anybody who grew up in the 60s, you know, Clint Walker, you know, had the show Cheyenne. I watched it every week. And then, of course, I loved him in The Dirty Dozen. And others, and he had quite a prolific career in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. So, but I would say he was really sort of near the end of things going. they don't have much for him to do in this movie.
No,
which is sort of a shame. He's a good actor.
He's a good actor. Someone that again started young, did a lot of stuff, was well known, but then. Yeah. Then sort of tapered out and then came back.
Yeah.
In a big way is Sylvia Sidney, who most people know.
Oh, God, yes, that's right. Yeah, I forgot.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah, well, I also remember, I remember her even more from Mars Attacks. I loved her in that.
And Mars Attacks.
Oh, she was great.
But you know, it's funny that she did all this stuff and then goes through a period where she's not doing a whole lot and then comes back and is known for that one thing.
Right.
And looking up, she actually won the Saturn Award for that.
She did. Oh no, she was great. She almost won. Yeah. She almost stole the movie. I mean, the whole thing, you know, I was waiting in this movie. I was waiting for her to grab Muffy, her stuffed cat. And start, and pull out the record player and start playing Slim Whitman. I will always think of her as that, as saying, you know, music.
Now,
and that might have been a good thing to put in this movie, is that maybe, you know, her playing Slim Whitman is the thing that keeps these zombies from attacking people. That might have, you know, been something they might have should have considered.
Anything. Because she's in it briefly, and really doesn't have much to do.
Yeah, and she's the owner of the school.
She is basically the sheriff, Mayor Vaughn.
That's it, exactly.
You know, Mayor Vaughn from Jaws. Then she occupies that space.
Well, this is definitely a ripoff of Jaws. You know what? I'm not going to stick that on Joseph Stefano because I think the network messed with this script quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they did for one particular scene that the network wouldn't run because they thought it was too violent. And it was one that they actually filmed and they made them pull it out and redo it all over again. So, I mean, Stefano had written some real bloody stuff in this that it got pulled, but,
and it's not the,
I just got a feeling it's so formulaic that they just said, no, we're going to follow the Jaws thing. Cause that was successful 3 years earlier, you know?
Right. And the problem with that is they take the surface details of a movie like Jaws and that's all they take.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Three characters, and there's really, you know, in Jaws they represent a particular personality,
right.
Here you don't have that. Basically, no. The two main leads, other than being interested in this one woman,
mm-hmm.
that they don't really represent anything.
Yeah.
And then the woman is just a, you know, nothing. I mean, she's the femme fatale.
Oh, it's embarrassing. Yeah, I mean, it's, of course, you know. It's almost like this was made in the 50s.
Yeah,
I mean, she's supposed to
anybody.
Be this big high. She at one time was this big high profile television journalist and all that. They made sort of a deal out of that because this is during a time where there weren't many women journalists other than maybe Barbara Walters and a couple of others. And then they don't do anything with it. Except
and it's too bad because that's what it needs.
They almost did. I mean, they started it and they didn't see it through. Where she goes off to try to investigate some of these strange deaths, and she hears a noise and
takes off running.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, yeah. I mean, that's the storyline would have been a much more interesting storyline to follow. And then go from there.
Yeah, and the only other, I love this in the credits, is they took the time to put in the end credits, and Michael J. London.
As the creature, yeah.
As the snow beast, because we need to show the snow beast some respect here. It's the, it's not a,
that's
it's right. The.
I think they were almost one. I wonder if they were thinking of maybe we'll do another one. Because they never really kill any. I mean, they do.
They don't show it.
But they leave it open ended. I'll put it that way.
And that's one of the problems is the way it ends, and they don't show it. You know, Jaws was smart. Of course, we know why. But
yeah,
they show just enough. This one. It's so obvious. It's just a guy in a big suit, and it's not a very good suit.
Well, and they don't even really show him full fledged, except one brief time. Basically, all they see is his arm through the whole movie.
Yeah, basically that's all you see. There's there at the very end, you see a close up just coming at you, kind of thing.
I counted; it was less than 3 seconds. It was just a flash.
3 seconds.
Yeah, if you
and
blink
mostly it's hands.
Right, blink feet. Your eyes, and you're going to miss him.
Over the shoulder. So they knew that this isn't a great costume.
It was although it was used in another movie.
Yeah.
Down the road. So I was like, okay. So, yeah, we got to use it for something. I guess we'll find something.
But, you know, it's too bad that they just didn't flesh it out. I mean, you know, it has potential. Yeah. It's those things that they could have really done something with.
Well, but, I was now. Did you were you aware of the scene that they cut out?
Yes, I'd heard about that.
Because I mean that you know, and I got thinking about that. And when I first read about it, it was like, oh my god, they should have left that in. Now, folks, okay, the parents with kids, you know, the network thought it was going to be too bloody for it. I mean, apparently, this film was originally written to be a lot bloodier than it was, but we're at a ski resort. They were going to have someone. The way Stefano had originally written it, somebody was riding up on the ski lift and fell off and was sort of, you know, they fell off and they, you know, you can't move. You probably broke a leg or whatever. And then the creature swoops in and gets them. In fact, one of the posters, well, let's see, it wasn't from that scene, but from another scene that they also really, when somebody who gets killed in the during the movie, the guy that slips and falls down the mountain and the monster gets him, you know, they really smooth that out so that they don't show much of anything. And the poster shows blood all over the place. yeah, they're pulling all that stuff out. And it was like, man, if they just left some of that stuff in, it might have been a more interesting movie.
You mentioned about the suit got used again. Okay.
Yeah.
It got used in a remake or sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
With John Schneider.
Yeah, the one that was in 2011. Yeah.
In 2011. And I've seen it. It is just as bad.
I have got to confess, I have not seen that version of it.
It's a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But yes, what I was surprised by was the same damn suit shows up. And I kept wondering, where was that suit that they got a hold of it?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, yeah, more than 30 years later, we just happened to have this
suit. Who had that suit? Because, you know,
If folks, we're not talking Rick Baker here. We're talking about something. No. If you wanted to go rent a gorilla suit or something at a costume shop, that's about that quality, basically. Except that it's white. Although, it's white in a lot of scenes, but then now there's the scene that they replaced the ski lift scene with that they thought was too violent. They reshot a scene, and I don't know who wrote the new scene, where they're having this winter carnival, they're crowning the queen, and the snow beast breaks into the building that they're having that in, and there's a mass panic. That's the scene they thought was going to play better than the original one. Yeah, I guess the most horrific thing in that scene was that somebody stepped on the Snow Queen's crown, and Sylvia Sidney nearly has a heart attack. Oh my God, they ruined the crown! You know,
she's more concerned with
humanity. The humanity.
Yeah. Well, the remake was, I mean, obviously it has a lot more attacks.
Yeah.
A lot more attacks, but not any better.
Well,
expect it to be, you know.
Yeah, even as kids, when we'd watch even, you know, low budget films, if they didn't show the monster. Now, again, not talking Jaws, because that was done brilliantly. The fact that worked so well. But I know as kids growing up, you know, we waited for the payoff. And if they were, you know, hinting and never really showing the monster, then we thought, no, I guess they didn't think much of their monster costume. That's sort of the impression I got with this one. It's just like, you guys really just didn't want to show it, did you?
Whatever budget they had.
Yeah. And all the handheld POV shots from the monster, which is straight out, you know, when Spielberg did it, it was pretty good. It was just sort of almost 3 years later had been so done to death in low budget horror films that it just doesn't play well here at all. You know, looking through the bushes, looking around a tree, you know. You know, from the monster's point of view, you just hear the growling, and that's
there. You know, you can go online and buy a costume.
Yeah,
it pretty much looks like Snow Beast.
yeah.
So, costume shop things, but it's pretty. You could repaint it the face a little bit, and it'd pretty much be Snow Beast.
Yeah.
So, I think this is one of those movies that. Just to say the title makes you smile.
That's true.
Great title. It really is. You just the title when you're a kid in 1977 and you hear, oh, on TV tonight, Snow Beast.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to watch it. There's no debate. No matter what was on the other channel.
That's right. You've got to see. That's right.
And there wasn't a whole lot, according to my my one book here, my tome of movies made for television. During this week, that was, you said that was a Wednesday.
Yeah, it was Wednesday night on NBC.
On the 28th. That same week, there was a an Exorcist ripoff on TV we could have gotten.
Yeah, those were hot back then, yeah, around that time. 1974 set the table for a lot of TV movies to come.
Yeah, that was the big one. And an Irwin Allen Fire, which, you know, remember they made Flood and Fire.
Yep. Flood and Fire.
Yeah. So
then he went back and ended up making Mark's favorite movie, The Towering Inferno, and sort of got it right that time.
Yes. And I think Fire was pretty much just a dry run because
I think so, but, yeah. But
its cast list is much more colorful.
Oh yeah, and like so many of these movies, I'll give Snow Beast one thing. The names were a little more up. This wasn't so much like, you know. And again, I've been kidding around with these guys that the producers had a lot of experience in doing films like or doing shows like The Love Boat, and this one didn't have quite that feel to it, but you could see they were trying for it. You know,
yeah,
getting these, you know, recognizable TV people in there. So you see some, you know, familiar faces from TV in this movie.
Had they approached it with a slight sly sense of humor,
yeah,
and attention, because that's really what they lose, is there's no tension.
That's
because
true.
There's these long, you know, shots of the mountains and all you hear is the wind, the cold wind, or you hear and that's pretty much it. You know, the other thing is, as kids, we were trained to those, to that slow pace.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh no, I didn't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, I was college age at this point, but it was still like, yeah, I had been set up to. You see the movie through, waiting for the payoff at the end. You know, you knew this is the way it was going to go. You were going to get little hints of it all throughout, and then they'll give you the creature in all of its glory at the end, but this one didn't do that.
but this is a mere 1 month away from the defining moment in our childhood that changed everything as far as movie going was.
Yeah.
And that's Star Wars.
Star Wars would come out a few months later.
Star Wars.
That's right.
Just that's a right. month.
Oh, was it? Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Was it May?
Yeah, the end of May. So we were like, oh.
Yeah, that just totally changed everything.
It changed everything. So this suddenly became that, oh, that tired old slow thing.
Yeah. I was so grateful for Star Wars when it came out because it opened up the door for movies like Star Crash. So it's just, you know.
every ripoff. That, yeah. But, you know, but Jim, to be fair, Star Wars also could be responsible for inspiring someone to make Ice Pirates.
Oh, I love that film. Yeah.
So
for all you Robert Urich fans, yes. Oh, what a great movie.
Both of you out there. We wanted to yell out to you.
Yeah. Yeah. That movie, the crazy movie, other snow movie that came out in the 50s. Was called Snow Creature. That's the one I was trying to think
of. Snow Creatures.
Yeah, from 1950, 1954. It was just, and the guy looked like literally he was wrapped in a shag carpet. I mean, it was that bad. And it wasn't even cut well. I mean, it was just really, really bad. Guy dressed in a shag carpet with mittens. That's exactly, folks, that, you know, you've and the folks on this podcast have heard me talk about that movie before. It was just awful.
Snow Creatures.
Yeah,
and who was in Snow Creatures?
I think Paul Langston might have been the only one I remember that I actually knew. I think he was the only one I really knew because I'd seen him in a lot of, you know, very low budget films. It was made by the brother of Billy Wilder, Billy Wilder's little brother, and we talked about one of his other ones. He had a string of movies from 1952 to 1954. Snow Creature was one of it. And the other one was one that we talked about just a few weeks ago called The Killers from Space.
Killers from Space.
Peter Graves' Tour de Force. Yeah, great movie. So yeah, that gives you an idea of the quality that Snow Creature had. The other one he did was Phantom from Space, which was like a yawner. Wasn't so bad that it was fun. It was just boring. It was awful.
Right. And what was the one? There was one called Yeti, just called Yeti. That came out that same year.
It did. Yeah. Yeah. And that one, it's funny. I've only seen it a couple of times and I can't really tell you too much about it. I've never seen it.
I remember the poster and it was Bigfoot that in the face basically was a ripoff of $6 Million Man.
But yeah, exactly.
It's a foreign movie.
Right. The one that always was the definitive one for me was the one that Peter Cushing was in, the Abominable Snowman that Hammer filmed it. Yeah, the one that Hammer did.
But Yeti was a giant, right? In that one?
Yes. Yes. And you only see him very briefly, and it's not so much a monster as it is more of a human. It was a very cerebral film. I mean, it was done very, very well.
Yeah, that was the one I have to go back and try to find.
Yeah, well, that one's around. You can find it streaming and stuff. It's had a resurgence with all the with everybody going streaming now and cutting the cable or whatever. A lot of these films are getting resurgences, or you can find them on these on some of these apps.
Plus, you get you have these things. These are the top 10 Yeti or Bigfoot movies.
Yeah,
the worst, the bottom, and people go look at those too and go, oh, let's watch these.
Yeah, I was amazed. I was amazed at how easy it was to find Snow Beast. To find this one.
Well, it's public domain, so it's...
Yeah, I mean, I found it, some of these, you might get them on a free app, and it's like nonstop commercials every 5 minutes, but this one was actually on Amazon Prime, so if you're a Prime subscriber, you can catch this one without commercials on it, and the quality
trust
of the ones
us,
I found
trust
was really
us,
good.
You want it to be free.
Yes, yeah. That's true, but the quality. The quality of the. I think there were three or four of them because there was like one on Freevee, and I think Tubi had one, and a couple of the others. And the quality was pretty good. They were actually in pretty good shape. So, which is sometimes you don't always get that with a public domain movie, even on a free streaming service. So,
yeah, so
if you want to check out just how. Well, this is sort of a yawner, folks. I mean, it really moves slow. you want something to happen. And just when you think something's going to happen, like when Yvette Mimieux's character, Ellen, she goes out on her own to try to solve the mystery, which takes her into some very dangerous places. I mean, it's like, I'm like, okay, now they're getting somewhere. Somebody decides let's go to the most dangerous place in the world where all the murders are happening, and I'll just go by myself with no weapons and just snoop around because I'm a big reporter, and she sort of gets very close to seeing the thing, and can hear it growling in the background or whatever. Do you think now we're talking? And then nothing. She runs away screaming.
This is also one of those movies where because they're in the snow and because they have to set up and lay track for dollies and things like that, they reuse a lot of the same spots.
Oh yeah. No, they stayed close to the major resort, you could tell.
Close to the resort, on a road, even though there's snow on the road, but it's obviously a road. So the place where Yvette Mimieux, her character, stops and hears the noises, and she sees blood going over the hill, and that part really, to me, it seemed to be the same location as where the truck.
Yeah,
they roll the logs down.
Right.
Just shot from the other side.
Yeah, they just reversed the shot. Yeah, they.
But it's the same. I think it's the same road and everything.
One of the things that I'd read about this was that it was brutally cold when they shot this movie. I mean, they didn't fake that part of it, that it was really shot at this location in Colorado. They really did shoot it during ski season. It was not a very pleasant experience for the actors. In fact, there's one scene where you've got Robert Logan and Bo Svenson. They jump into this hot tub, which is outdoors, an outdoor hot tub.
Yes.
And they said, I think it was Robert Logan, I think, during an interview that he had about the movie, said it was about 5 degrees outside. And they had to shoot the scene quick because their hair kept freezing. I can't imagine, it's fine once you're in the hot tub underwater or whatever, because it's warm. It's, you know, it's very hot water. But man, when you start sticking your head up in 5 degree weather, that's not a pleasant experience.
Yeah. They have a movie like that, and you know, it's filmed on the cheap. These guys couldn't have been paid much. And anything that throws into that,
I could not find any
a movie like that didn't get shut down because they couldn't pay for all that.
Yeah, I couldn't find any budget information on this. So I don't really know how much money NBC gave them to shoot this. But I'm guessing it's not much. Listen, 77, probably maybe 150,000 at best. Maybe, you know, and you got Corman making films for 60,000 and shooting them in 3 days. And they probably, I would say, probably had 7 days to shoot this. I would be surprised if they had much more time than that. They used to shoot a lot of these movies, made for TV movies, like TV shows. You know, they didn't waste much time at all.
Just a week. But that's also how these people show up in so many of them, because
they can double up on them. Yeah,
one easy. To the next one to the next one, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know the couple I worked on, they didn't waste any time at all. They would shoot, you know, 16, 17-hour days, and they were lucky to get a weekend. I mean, they just, it was just down
Which
and
one?
Dirty. And dirt.
Did you do any of the, what was the one that Andy Griffith did? Murder in Coweta County.
Murder in Coweta County. Yeah. I was going to say, it was a time in my life where it was like wherever I was living, they wouldn't shoot there. I always had to go to Atlanta or, you know, somewhere outside of Atlanta or whatever. Yeah, now that one I missed out on. That one might have been a fun one to do. I'd have to say at the time he did that one, that was like one of the biggest, most successful movies that had been shot in Georgia at that time anyway, because everything else was pretty much real low budget stuff. It took a long time before we got the good ones under our belts. But hey, it was a paycheck.
Hey, but you would have worked on Snow Beast. I would.
Why not? Yeah, no, I would have worked.
I would have played
back then.
Snow
I would back then when the phone rang and they said we got something for you. I didn't even ask what it was. I just went. Just, you know, where is it? What time do I have to be there? You know.
See, then those credits could have said Jim Adams.
That's right.
The Snow Beast.
As the Snow Beast.
The Snow Beast.
You know what that reminded me of? The first time I saw that, it was almost like watching Leave It to Beaver. You know, they go down this whole credit list and then, and Michael J. London as the Beaver. You did have to say the Snow Beast as if there was like others in there that we saw.
Others.
We didn't want to confuse him with the dead grizzly bear that you see in this movie. By the way, I don't know. This is like pre-SPCA stuff. So I don't know if that was a real dead grizzly or just a carcass or a bearskin rug or something.
Maybe they found it.
Yeah.
But shoot it.
But again, you want to talk about Jaws ripoff, folks. I mean, they go out. They have all these people going out to hunt what they think is a bear that's killing all these people because they're convinced it's not a, you know, even though they've got three people telling them, no, I saw a monster. It's like, nah, it's a bear.
Yeah, I saw it. It was white.
A bear. Yeah, just like the big fisherman scene where they all go out to get the shark and they come back with one. And I mean, it's almost like word for word. This is why I don't think Stefano wrote all of this script where, where one of the main, I guess it was Robert Logan's character, says, we're going to cut that bear open and find out if that really is who did this.
Yeah, it's just
it's exactly like what we, you know, like
but you know, Jaws, I mean, you know. Who knows what he was paid? And they said, we want a Jaws ripoff. Write us a Jaws ripoff.
Well, that's true. That may have been.
You know, okay.
This is like 15 years after The Outer Limits. So by then, Joe Stefano was pretty established as a sci-fi writer. I mean, you know, he was critically acclaimed at this point, but I don't know. You know, like you said, take the job, you know.
It would be interesting to see, you know, if there was any episodes where, I mean, not an episode, but an interview that he did where he talks about but you know, I mean, he wrote a little bit of everything. I mean, he wrote
for Star Trek. Yes, he did. Yeah.
And that's a horrible episode, by the way. And, you know, he was a writer on Swamp Thing, the TV series Swamp Thing.
That's true. Yep.
You know, so, I mean, he was not above doing some crap.
No, that's true. Well, and then again, some of this, if you're doing like episodic television and stuff like that, a lot of times you're at the mercy of the network or the production company who pretty much tell you what to write, and then you just got to make it sound good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's you know, whatever he was happy to get a paycheck.
I'm just sort of surprised that with the background of the producers they had in this movie, that we didn't see like Jack Jones come in and sing a song like at the Snow Queen Festival or something, just something to almost make it like a Love Boat episode.
Oh gosh. Yes. Well, there was, you know, the only thing missing was there needed to be like a Snow Beast love theme.
Yes, that would have been good. Yeah.
That's really. Now, here's an interesting thing for all our avid listeners out there.
Yeah.
If you have so engaged by this movie and you just have to be caught up in the mania of Snow Beast, you can go on eBay right now buy one of the original scripts.
Whoa.
From Stefano. Yes, an original script of the Maybe we need to get this into a radio play of Snow Beast, Jim.
It might be more interesting, yeah. Well, it would have that scene in there, the bloody scene that they cut out. Because Stefano...
January...
I don't believe Stefano wrote the scene that, you know, is the creature attacking the Snow Queen's ceremony.
No.
Because they had already shot the scene that was considered too bloody, so they had to shoot this on the cuff. I'm thinking Herb Wallerstein, who was the director, probably just had to come up with something and said, okay, we'll just have him attack the thing or whatever, you know.
Right. Well, it's a 100-page script.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
This was the final shooting script dated January 1977. So they shot this thing.
Yeah.
Edited.
It was on TV in 3 months or whatever.
And got it on TV in less than 3 months.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's like I said,
they wasted January. Who knows when they started actually.
They wasted no time. I remember doing a two-part miniseries based on a true story. It was called Stay the Night, and it was about a murder. This woman who got this high school kid, he fell in love with her, and she was like a beautician. Or, you know, this was up in Ackworth, Georgia, and conned him into killing her husband. It was a big notorious case here back in the late 70s, early 80s. From the time we shot just the scenes I was in, it was on TV within a month. I mean, it was that quick of a turnaround. It blew our minds how fast they got that on TV. So they wasted no time on some of these.
It's incredible that this is out there. That you know, that someone has it now. $815. you know.
I was going to say I might. But this one has been, I know it's been released. This has been released on DVD. I'm not sure if there's a Blu-ray out there or not. There might be one in a, you know, a compilation or something, but.
Yeah, I know it's.
But it did come out on DVD.
I picked it up, it was on a compilation, and then.
Yeah, I remember seeing it on VHS. And that was in the time I was collecting VHSs, but I wasn't really inspired to buy it. But the DVD, if you're interested in seeing it on DVD, you can get it with 9 other films in the Vault of Horror is the name of the DVD collection that it's in.
Well, but for again, avid listeners, you can get a DVD double feature of it.
Oh,
with previous collaboration, Moon of the Wolf.
Oh my goodness, that's right.
Those two.
I do remember reading that somewhere. You're right. Yeah.
Yes.
That's how you thought of those two together. Okay, there we go.
Well, I don't have that one, but I don't have them together. But you know, those two kind of go hand in hand because they are just movies that could have been better.
Yeah.
You know, they had potential, could have been better.
I know that was a wonderful time from the late 60s on for going into the early 80s when they, you know, ABC starts the movie of the week and the trend just caught fire. And, you know, occasionally you would get a real gem out of some of those TV movies, a couple that actually did get released into the theaters afterwards. After people saw them for free, they actually would go and pay to see them again on the big screen. We got sort of, I think, numb to it. It was just sort of like, it was a good way to kill an hour and a half if you had nothing else to do. So there, you could turn around and find these movies all over the place.
Oh, yeah. And it makes you wonder, did George Lucas see this on TV and go, maybe I need to know these in Empire Strikes Back?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Maybe that's where he got the idea to set it on the snow planet. Yeah.
I need a snow beast in my movie.
Well, folks, we can't confirm that that's what happened, but it wouldn't surprise me at all.
So the Wampa, that would make him a snow beast.
A snow beast. That's right. Yeah.
Not the snow beast.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. Were they even referring to these creatures as Yeti at this point? I'm trying to think when that term came, because they didn't mention that name at all in this. And there's a couple of other similar films where you don't hear Yeti for a long time.
Now, Yeti was mostly the first time I really heard Yeti was always in those Bigfoot documentaries.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
In Search of, when they did one.
And it always seemed to refer to the, you know, because I always, you know, as a kid, I grew up. Abominable Snowman. And that always meant the one that was, you know, it was in China, it was in Tibet, that in Nepal, some of those places. And then it was like, oh, we've got them here in the United States too. Oh, wow. I didn't know that. You know, and then the old Sasquatch. Stories which have been around for a long time, but then we started hearing about them there. And I think that was right after when they did Legend of Boggy Creek, which I went and saw and walked out of the theater shaking my head.
Then there was Return to Boggy Creek.
I remember when that came out, I was like, why are we returning to this? It was an awful movie. I only went to see it because Marianne was in it. That's the only reason I went and saw that movie.
This one. I remember seeing the promo for this.
Yep.
Like, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
Those promos were great.
They were better than the movie sometimes.
Charles Pierce.
Yep.
Right. Who also did Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Yeah, I was going to say there was. I'm trying to think of the company. Was it Norelco? Or something like that that made those, a lot of those films, Town That Dreaded Sundown and Boggy Creek. It was there was a company, and I kept thinking it was the same name as the Razor Company. I don't think they were related, but it was like Morocco Productions or something like that. It was, and they just did a spin, and they were all would go straight to drive-ins. It seemed like.
Well, no, Town of Dreaded Sundown was because Arkoff was involved in that. So that's
okay. That was an AIP. But and then they would do these films that you go in and you think you're watching a documentary, and then realize at the end they really weren't. It was sort of like when the first found footage films came out.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You thought, is this real or not? And you really weren't sure until the end of the movie. And I still love those things. I mean, if they're done well, they're just really a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and that was pretty cool. That was Swamp Ape.
Yeah.
when they keep referring to him as Swamp Ape.
Yeah, or Skunk Ape, I think was another term they used too. Yeah. And the Folk Monster, I remember that one because apparently there were legends of that kind of thing in Folk, Arkansas, where a couple of them were shot. So yeah, so,
right. That was called Folk. Yeah, Dawn Wells was also in the other one, Town of Dreaded Sundown.
Yeah, she did a couple of those after she was the ringer they brought in. You know, hey, we got to get the gal from Gilligan's Island. That'll bring people in. And they were right, because a lot of those movies I'd go see if she was in it.
Yeah, well, that, you know, knew who she was.
Yeah, absolutely. So, folks, 1977, Snow Beast. I'm surprised they didn't, like you said, Clay, I'm surprised they didn't change the name to The Snow Beast. But
that's right.
But these fun made-for-TV films. We'll find some more of them for you, folks, because they are... they bring back some memories, and I'm not bad memories. It's just like this was a time of
these are what they are. You know, this is a movie probably made $150,000.
I'm thinking about $150,000 sounds about right, because a lot of the ones we've mentioned here already were shot for like up to $100,000. So,
well, I think the amount was $151,000 because they had to buy the suit.
Oh, yeah, the suit. I forgot about it.
It's adjust our budget.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
But, you know, one thing we haven't addressed.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
This one is for our good, but not here, Mark Maddox. There are a few shots of Yvette Mimieux in a very tight ski outfit.
Oh, so, yeah. No, yeah. No. I mean, yeah, she was Mark Maddox. she was in her late 30s when she did this. Yeah.
She was always just a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's what I was going to say. Even when I saw her in her later works before... And she got out of the business, but became a very successful business person. She got big into real estate. And I believe she published a book, if I'm not mistaken. And so did a lot of things leading up to when she passed away. She was 80 when she passed away. But yeah, I mean, she remained beautiful right up until almost the time she died. You know, I'd see her interviews and stuff. Yeah.
You know, this movie, unfortunately, it was, like you said, it's freezing cold. And some of the shots, you can see how cold it was.
Oh, yeah. No, you could tell that people were uncomfortable.
In the faces. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's too bad because she's so beautiful, but she looks miserable in some of these
shots. Oh, I know. Well, they had her. I mean, yeah, I was going to say for the outdoor stuff, she's wrapped up. So it's like, oh, wait a minute. Is that her? Let's make sure. Yeah, but the eyes sort of gave it away. But I was like, God, they had to be cold. I'm just kept thinking, you know, if they say cut, okay, let's do it again. I just, you know, it's like, no, we're not. No.
Oh. Done.
Hot tub scene. I felt sorry for the two guys in the hot tub scene. That was just... That had to be brutal.
I'm going
to
take a guess and say there weren't very many takes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you don't want to, you know, Bo Svenson was 6'4", and Robert Logan was like 6'2", both in very good shape. And it was like, yeah, you weren't going to ask them to do too many takes in that hot tub. or you were going to pay dearly for it.
That's right.
Oh, man. Unreal. Definitely. All right. So there you go, folks. The Snow Creature, 1977. Hey, folks, we're about 3 weeks away from our 7th anniversary. Talked to Mark earlier in the week, and he is just booked solid right now. We're going to try to get him back as soon as we can. But we got Clay and Madeline still with us here. Holding us out. And Clay, I understand you're going to be making a little bit of a trip on
us. We're trying to get Mark back. But
oh, yeah.
For a while. But, hey, here's Clay.
Well, I haven't had a chance to get you on enough. So, I mean, so now we've got a chance.
That's right.
Yeah, get you on some more here. Because we've had a lot of fun doing this.
You know I like doing this.
Oh, absolutely. And
it's always fun.
And we do have our panel coming up in a few months. So I'll give you a little advance notice, folks. Monsterama coming your way in October on, what is it, Halloween
October,
weekend?
Yes.
It's Halloween weekend.
Yes, Halloween weekend.
And I can't think of the name of it. We've got a new location just outside of Atlanta, but in the Atlanta area. I'll look it up next time so I can tell you. I can't remember. I think it's the Northside Marriott, Hilton, Northside Hilton, I believe, but don't quote me on that. But we'll be doing a panel there, but unfortunately, Mark won't be there. So it'll be Clay, Madeline, and I doing the panel, and maybe a guest star. I may bring in a guest to sit in with us as well.
I was trying to find the I can't remember the hotel's name. I'm drawing a blank on it too.
Yeah, but it's funny. It's very close
to Hilton Atlanta Northeast.
It is Northeast. Okay, yeah, it's like right down Northeast, the street from where I live now. So it's like very convenient. So, but anyway, folks,
October 27th through the 29th.
That's it, and we'll tell you more about it. We're hoping that it is scheduled for to have Caroline Monroe there. And I hope she can make it this time. She couldn't make it the last time that she was scheduled. So I'm really looking forward to seeing her again. She's such a sweet lady and is one of my favorite people in the world. So, yeah.
They've got some good guests.
Oh, yeah. Up. Well, I'm looking forward to Nicholas Meyer and others.
Meyer, yeah.
Really, always wanted to meet him. And but, yeah, they've got a great lineup, as we always
do. It's a good family.
Family
Monster Con.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Great
lot
family
of fun.
Feel.
The celebrities are always very accessible at that one, too. It's one thing that really attracts me to a Monsterama. So put it on your calendars, folks, and it can be a great weekend for it. You can trick-or-treat and go to Monsterama all on the same weekend. So anyway. All right,
go.
Clay. Wow, we'll come up with some more down the road here.
Yes.
I've got to just put to bed the 7th season because, oh my God, what a what a wild season that this has been with my housing situation and stuff like that. Hopefully, we'll never have to go through that again. But thanks
I hope
again,
not.
Yeah. Thanks again, folks, for hanging with us, and you've hung with us and come right back after our 3-month hiatus, and we'll be back with you again next Monday with an all new episode of Monster Attack. Have a great week, folks. We'll see you then.
What you gonna do, brothers and sisters, when thousands of geeky fans descend on Atlanta for 5 days and nights of the grandest con of them all? You can prepare by training, eating your vitamins, saying your prayers, and checking out the DragonCon report each and every month leading up to the show. Watch or listen and let DragonCon mania run wild on you!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.